Hi there, I'm K-Town, and on this edition of Mysterious Radio.
You know, going back, you'll hear a lot of people that come into the paranormal because they've had some sort of paranormal related experiences when they were young. They've had some sort of haunting experience, ghostly experience, if you will. And they come into the paranormal because they want answers about those experiences they've had. And I came from a different angle. I came kind of from a skeptic's angle. And when I say a skeptic, I don't want people to confuse that, the word skeptic, with the word cynic, because somebody who is a cynic pretty much just outright denies that something exists. If you're talking about the UFO subject or ghosts or hauntings, there's cynics out there that simply just outright will say, hey, I don't believe in that stuff. That's not really where I was. I was more in the skeptical kind of area. And I think I like to refer to myself as a curious skeptic because I was always kind of curious about the subject of ghosts and hauntings, but I was really not sure whether or not there was something to it or not, because it always goes back to the old adage, I'll believe it when it happens to me. So, I had friends, family members, coworkers, acquaintances share stories with me. Either they had a strange encounter or they had a house that they thought was haunted where stuff was getting moved around. And I had a lot of friends that shared stories with me. And, you know, and I thought, well, these people seem rational. And, I want to believe them. But I was still kind of on the fence early on, and I didn't have any paranormal experiences at a young age. So I was always kind of, to me, it was kind of, I was just kind of sitting on the fence about it. About 2005 timeframe, my wife and I started watching the Ghost Hunters show on Sci-Fi. And my wife was always a little bit more open to ghosts and hauntings and psychics and mediums. In fact, she, would go on us, from time to time. She had a psychic she'd go get a reading done with. And I would, at that point in my life, I'd just kind of shake my head and that's just kind of the space I was in. I was in the military for active duty for 12 years, another 13 years on the reserve side. One, it was just kind of the space I was in at the time. I just was, really not open to that kind of stuff. When it came to ghosts and hauntings, I watched the show. I thought it's kind of entertaining. I watched the Ghost Hunter show with my wife for several years, but I was never fully sold on it. I go back to the old adage, I'll believe it when it happens to me. I'll fast forward several years here, 2013, we got an invite from a friend on Facebook. There was a ghost hunting event. I live in northern Utah, so I'm in the Ogden, Utah area. We got an invite. This was kind of latter part of 2013, an invite to go on this ghost hunting event with this group that was putting on tours at this old location. It's an old mill. It was called the Barren Woolen Mill. It's up in Brigham City, which is about 15, 20 miles north of where I live. And we talked about it. And, again, I'm in the curious phase. Like I said, I'm kind of a curious skeptic. I'm just kind of, still curious about it. But, we talked it over and we thought, why don't we just go up there and check this thing out? And see what it's all about. I said, I think my wife's a little bit more open to this stuff than I was at the time. I mean, I was open to at least exploring and checking it out and seeing what it was all about. So we went to this event up in Brigham City at the Barren Woolen Mill. And You know, there was other guests there, and the group was there, and the main guy, the guy that was really hosting the event, was kind of given the history on the location. He knew a lot about the history. He was from the Brigham City area, and he had been doing paranormal investigating for many years. I want to say about 20 years. So he was talking a little bit about the history and some of the experiences, because him and his group had investigated there several times. A little bit about the paranormal experiences they had had there. He had had, and other people either in the group or he had known had had at that location. Unfortunately, this location burned down about 4 to 5 years ago. And so it's no longer in existence. But so we went on the event, and we were just, you know, again, walking around with the group at this location. They had magflies, flashlights with them, a couple of other devices, voice recorders, and they were going to different parts of the buildings. There's several buildings on this location, but the main building is like a three-story building. It was a very old building. Some of the machinery that they used, because it hadn't been in operation for probably 30 years. So I think I want to say the mill shut down in the late 70s, early 80s. So they still had a lot of the machinery in there and stuff, and people, I mean, there was a lot of loss of life at that location. People died in the course of doing their duties of working there. So there was a lot of tragedy associated with it throughout the years. This place opened in the late 1800s, so it had, you know, been around for around 100 years before it closed down. So there was a lot of history and a lot of, you know, reported deaths there. But anyways, we're just going around with the group, and, you know, they have the mag flashlights and are asking questions. And
what are they, what are they using? I'm sorry for interrupting you, Kurt, but what are they using? Are they using some type of EVP type stuff, or what are they doing exactly?
Yeah. So they've got, digital voice recorders. They've got mag flashlights, and there's a little trick. If you kind of loosen the end of the mag flashlight, just a little pressure will illuminate it or turn it back off. So they are trying to get some interaction with these mag flashlights. Now, there's a lot of people out there who say, well, that's not a very sound investigative technique in the paranormal. You're creating a loose connection. But they seem to be getting some interaction to questions they were asking with the mag flashlights. So, you know, again, I'm a bit of a skeptic. I'm thinking, well, that's a loose connection, or, you know, maybe there's some trickery involved here, even though they're getting the flashlights to go on and off. They've got a few other devices, EMF devices, that sort of stuff. And they're just asking questions, but they're really trying to get interaction on the mag flashlights, which they seem to be getting some interaction to questions and such. So, you know, we spent some time in the main building. And then there's like probably about six or seven buildings on this facility. So some are a few storage buildings. I mean, it's just a huge location. Unfortunately, like I said, it's burnt down now. So we were making our way through the main building and then went to a couple of the back buildings, just kind of, you know, doing the route. And, you know, again, they're still doing the mag flashlight stuff and talking, you know, intermittently. They're kind of talking about stories about things that had happened there, and there's some conversation going on. I had to run back to the car. So we're one of the back buildings now, and I had to go back to the car. I think I was going to get a flashlight for my wife. And so I started heading back to the car, told the group, I'm going to run out to the car and I'll be right back. So I left and was walking in this sidewalk that's in between the two buildings at the location. And as I'm walking, I look up at the main building. I think I mentioned the main building is like a three-story building. Very old building. Some of the windows are shattered out. And I look up and I see this glowing green ball of light. Kind of like what maybe some people would call an orb. Almost seemed like it was a self-illuminating ball of light, this green ball of light. And it's just floating up there in the window on the third floor. So, you know, my thought is, okay, somebody's got a colored flashlight. That's my first thought. You know, again, skeptical mind, I'm thinking that's got to be somebody with a flashlight up there. So, you know, we were broken up, I'll back up for just a second. We were broken up into two different groups at the location because there was enough guests that they decided to break us up into two groups. So I thought, well, maybe this is the other group and they're up on the third floor and somebody's shining a colored flashlight. So, you know, I'm, of course, yelling up there, hey, is there anybody up there? Hello, you know.
Are you the only one that saw it?
Yes, I'm alone because, like I said, I'm walking back to go to the car to get something for my wife. She stayed with the group. I think I was going, if I remember right, to get a flashlight for her. Like I said, I was just walking alone to go back to the parking lot, get the flashlight and come back. So I'm just up. I'm just standing there looking up at this green ball of light floating. And then I'm trying to yell up there to see if anybody's up there, and I'm not getting any response. I wasn't exactly sure where the other group was, so I'm watching this green ball of light, and it kind of got a little bit bigger, and then it got a little bit smaller again, and it floated up towards the ceiling, and then just kind of disappeared. And this probably went on for, I don't know, about 15, 20 seconds. I watched this thing. And I thought, well, that's really unusual because I was calling up there trying to make sure there was nobody up there. And, you know, again, I'm pretty sure if somebody would have been up there, they probably would have heard me and maybe somebody would have responded. So I go back to the car. I think I grabbed a flashlight, went back and rejoined the group at that back building we were in. And I asked the host of our group, I said, do you know where the other group is? And he says, well, they've been in the basement of the main building, which, again, I mentioned it's a three-story building. They've been in the back basement area for the last 10 or 15 minutes. So I said, okay, so you're sure there was nobody up on that third floor? And he said, yeah, that other group's been in the back basement area. So, he basically confirmed with me there was nobody up on that third floor. So, you know, I'm kind of scratching my head going, well, that's strange. I don't know what I just witnessed. I'm not certain it's paranormal, but it was kind of unusual. And so, you know, I just continued going along with the group on the rest of the tour. I think it went on for another hour or so. And we were wrapping up. They were packing up equipment and stuff. We were heading back to the parking lot. There was a group of people, and my wife was talking to a few people in the group behind us. I'm walking ahead alone. Same area that I just mentioned, I saw the green ball of light. And I'm walking on that sidewalk between the buildings. Now, to the left of me, the main building that I mentioned is to the right. As I'm walking out, to the left of me is this old storage building, which we went into earlier in the night and kind of investigated and such. And I'm walking ahead of the group, and I just peek my head into this storage building, and I see this shadow dart across the wall. And so I thought, well, that's really bizarre. You know, there is a road nearby, and there's cars that go by, but you know what car lights look like. And there was no car passing by anyways. It looked like the shadow of a person that had darted across the wall. Now, it wasn't my shadow. And there's nobody in the group behind me. It couldn't have been their shadow because they were too far away. And there was nobody else in the building. So I just kind of stood there and looked and kind of like in awe. I'm like, oh, that's bizarre. It was almost like I spooked something. And it looked like the shadow of a person that went across that wall. So the group kind of caught up to me, and one of the guys that was in the group, and he was part of the paranormal group that was putting on the event, he said, because he could tell I was kind of looking at something. He said, what happened? You know, did you see something? And I said, yeah. You know, I said, I think I just seen a person's shadow dart across the wall. And so he just kind of looked at me and he said, yeah, we have that happen here sometimes. And so he goes in the building, and, you know, I walk in with him, and we're just kind of looking around and investigating a little bit. Again, the event's already pretty much over. But, you know, he's like talking to me about it, and he's like, what did it look like? And I said, well, it looked like a person, and it just kind of dashed across, dashed across the wall, opposite direction from me. And, I was just kind of talking to him about it. And then that was it. We ended the event, and my wife and I headed home. I'll back up a little bit because the other thing I did was I was having conversation with the host of the event, and I was not part of a paranormal group. Again, I'm just kind of filling this stuff out. To be honest with you, K-Town, I fully expected that I would check this stuff out and that nothing would happen, right? I was kind of thinking, yeah, I'll probably, you know, do this a couple of times, maybe. Nothing will happen, and I'll just go about my life, right? Say, yeah, there was nothing really to this. But that's not the way it happened. So, you know, I'll back up a little bit. I was talking to the host a little bit earlier in the night, and, you know, I was asking him about locations. And, you know, I'm not part of a paranormal group, but I'm just asking if there's any other cool locations maybe my wife and I can go check out. And he mentioned another location that is out past Twilla here in northern Utah. It's all that's left of an old mining town. It was an old mining town called Merker, Utah. The town is now completely flattened. There is no town there anymore. The Barrick Gold Company went in there and flattened the old town. And all that's left standing or remaining of that old mining town is an old cemetery that sits up on a hill. It's actually really up on a mountainside. So he talked about that location, and he said, you know, there is no trespassing there. You can go anytime you want. You can go visit. He said, you know, me and a few members of my group have went out there several times, and we've had some interesting things happen. So, you know, I'm thinking, well, I don't know, a cemetery. But then, you know, I'm sitting here thinking about it, and I'm thinking, well, this is a very old cemetery. The last person laid to rest there was like 1915. Right. So this is a very old place. And so, you know, we finished up the event, went home. My wife and I were talking about, you know, the event, and, you know, and we also start talking about this Merker location, but I think I was more curious than she was. You know, I started talking to her about it. I said, well, maybe we should go check out this Merker Cemetery place that the host had been talking about. That sounds kind of interesting. And, you know, my wife, she gets spooked really easy. So she was not entirely keen on the idea initially. And, you know, I just talked to her about it. I think it was October, probably about mid-October, early or mid-October when we went on the event. And so some weeks had passed, and I was still talking to her about this Merker location. Somehow, I finally talked her into taking the trip out there. From where I live, it's probably a little over an hour drive, hour to hour and a half drive, depending on traffic. And I finally talked her into going out there with me in an early November evening. And I mentioned that I'm in northern Utah. So sometimes in early November, we're already getting cold. You know, weather. The temperature's already getting kind of cold. This year, it was kind of unseasonably warm. And so, you know, we looked up the directions on the internet. Like I said, I somehow talked her into making the trip out there with me. And so we drove out there. We got the directions and drove out there. And we found the place, you know. By the time we got out there, we're like, wow, this is in the middle of nowhere. It's really, you know, we didn't see a soul in sight for miles as we're driving up close to the location. And we get there, and it's starting to get dark. You know, the sun's kind of dipping down over the mountain. So we get out. We had a couple of flashlights. At that point, I decided to purchase a voice recorder. And so we made the trek up this hill. Now, the cemetery sits up on a hill, I mentioned. It's about a quarter of a mile hike up a hill. So, and it's got a bit of a creep factor to it, this location. You know, again, we don't see a single person in sight. Now, if you go there in the summertime or even early fall, you're probably going to see ATVers out there because there's ATV trails and motorcycle trails, and people even go out there and shoot guns and all kinds of stuff. I mean, it's out there in the desert, you know, on the mountainside. So anyways, you know, we saw like gun shells out there and all kinds of stuff. And so, you know, obviously people have been out there in the past, but on this particular occasion, there was no one around. It was absolutely not a soul in sight. So we made the trek up the hill. And when you get to the top of the hill, there's simply a wooden sign that says Merker Cemetery. And I got a picture of it in the book. And then you also, when you get to the top of the hill, that's where you see some of the grave sites. So, and some of them are just, again, this is a very old cemetery. a lot of the grave sites are just marked by wooden slats. There's wooden slats around the grave. Some of them are even rock piles. That's all there is at some of these grave sites. So, you know, we're trying to be respectful. We're walking around the perimeter of the area. And there's a trail going around kind of the perimeter. And we walked around the perimeter of the trail, just kind of exploring, trying to make sure that nobody else was there with us. No squatters, anything like that. So, you know, we're just walking around the trail, exploring and checking things out. We could hear some coyotes in the background. The other thing that I noticed right away is it's a beautiful location. I mean, you're looking, you're kind of up on a mountain, on a hill or on a mountainside, looking out. You can see all of the valley. The only thing you can see off in the distance really is the Tooele Army Depot Annex. So there's a couple of buildings off in the valley, several miles out. You can see the Tooele Army Annex out there. Other than that, there's nothing out there. I mean, there's, again, not a soul in sight. We walking around. And so, you know, we got the flashlights. I got the mag flashlights. I kind of loosened the connection on it, trying to get some interaction with the flashlight, walking around, asking questions. Almost kind of seems silly, right? Because I've never done this before. We're trying to ask questions to, you know, somebody that we don't even know is there or not, you know, I mean, but I'm doing it. And, you know, I'm trying to see if we get any interaction. And I've got a voice recorder, so I'm hoping maybe we might catch an EVP or something if we're lucky. I don't know. Again, I'm still kind of, jury's still out for me whether ghosts or hauntings are real, even though I had those two experiences I mentioned. And it's getting dark. So we're still walking around with the flashlights, walking around to the different grave sites and such, and, you know, just exploring and asking a few questions, and nothing's happening. So it's starting to get a little bit colder as it's getting really dark. So we had talked about it. I think we'd been there for maybe 40, 45 minutes. And my wife and I decided, well, maybe it's time to go. She was a little bit creeped out. You know, it's dark. We're the only ones up there. She's still worried that there could be a squatter somewhere, maybe. So we're just exploring, but, you know, we start talking about it, that maybe it's time to make our way out. So we start heading back, and we get to the top of the hill there where you go to make your way down the hill. And I decide that I'm going to try one last ditch effort to get some interaction. So there's that marker sign I mentioned, the little wooden sign. So I put the flashlight up on the sign. And that little connection's loose. And I think I turned the flashlight on and asked if somebody was there with us, if they could turn the flashlight off. And the flashlight went off. Now, I had been trying this for 30, 40 minutes beforehand. I wasn't getting anything. And then the flashlight, I think, went off. We asked if somebody was there with us to turn it back on. The flashlight illuminated, and that went on probably 3 or 4 times. So it's kind of unusual. I'm thinking, well, we couldn't get this to work before, and it seemed to be now going off to our questions or responses. Just as I'm kind of finishing up with that, again, my wife's kind of tugging on my arm. I think we need to go. And so we were just getting ready to leave. And I look at my wife. I said, "You hear that?" And it sounded like somebody was casually whistling. Like maybe you would hear somebody walking down the street and just jovially whistling, like whistling a tune or just, you know, kind of casually whistling. And so not like a bird whistling, but it sounded like a person actually whistling. So, you know, I take my flashlight, I'm shining it. There's a lot of juniper trees at this location. I got a couple of pictures of it in the book. Like I said, there's a little bit of a creep factor to this. So, you know, you can probably understand my wife's uneasiness. Now we're hearing whistling and she's just ready to go. So I'm shining the flashlight. I'm, you know, around through the trees and we don't see anything. Again, the only other thing we heard was coyotes, beforehand. So now I'm hearing this whistling And then my wife just, she's like, we're leaving. And she's tugging on my arm. We make our way down the hill. And then, you know, I did mention I had a voice recorder. I did play back the voice recorder because I, you know, I think I had 30, 40 minutes of audio there that I, you know, wanted to go back and listen to. So I'm going back and listening to the voice recorder and I don't hear anything, you know, minus the coyotes off in the distance until we get to the sign. And then, you know, we're asking those questions and we start hearing the whistling. So I captured the whistling on the voice recorder as well. And, you know, maybe about, I don't know, 15, 20 seconds of it. And so that was interesting because it was like nothing was happening. And then all of a sudden, right, we're getting ready to leave. We had those two experiences. Now, I had a sister-in-law who was already working with a paranormal group here in northern Utah. So she knew that we went to the Barren Woolen Mill to go to this event. She knew that me and my wife, it's my wife's sister. She knew that we went out to Merkur to check that place out. And she had mentioned the paranormal group to me a few times. She said, maybe you should come with us just as a guest and check things out. You know, she knew I, you know, was kind of curious about it. But again, I was still, you know, not really sure about ghosts and hauntings and such. But anyways, so I had those experiences too. So now it's just kind of whetting my appetite for wanting to explore more. Because, you know, again, I'm not fully sold that this is all paranormal, but I'm getting more curious. I'm like, okay, these were interesting experiences. Maybe I need to continue exploring. And again, my sister-in-law mentioned the paranormal group and I talked to her about our trip out to Merkur and she's like, why don't you just go on the site and apply to be a member in training with the group or just come along as a guest. So she finally convinced me to go on the site with the paranormal group she was working with. I went in there and I applied to be, you know, a member in training. And then I got a call from the director of the group about 4 or 5 days later. And actually, it was a deputy director. And she said, do you just calling you? Because I noticed you went and filled out the online questionnaire. You know, they had several questions in there. So if they don't like your responses, they're probably not going to invite you along with the group. Anyways, she said, I liked your responses to the questions. And she said, would you like to come as a guest to join us on one of our investigations? And I said, sure. You know, absolutely. Why not? You know, again, I'm more curious about this now. And so the group was doing an investigation here in the Ogden area. And it's just right up Ogden Canyon here. It's a very old location called Gray Cliff Lodge. And so Gray Cliff is now a restaurant. It's been a restaurant for, I think, maybe 60, 70 years or longer. And it's a very, very old building. It was originally built, I want to say, like 1912. By the McKay family, who was a very wealthy family here in the Ogden area in the early 1900s. They were big donors to the McKay D Hospital. They built that lodge as kind of a summer retreat for them. They would go up to the canyon and, you know, have family parties and stay up there. And so the McKay family initially built it. I want to say in the mid 40s, and, you know, I may not have the history here 100%. They sold it to another family. I want to say it was mid-40s time frame. And that other family, you know, after buying it, they eventually turned it into a restaurant. And so it became, you know, it's still called the Gray Cliff Lodge, but it was Gray Cliff Lodge and Restaurant. And so it's been a restaurant since mid to late 40s, I want to say, and it's still a restaurant now. So paranormal groups go there. They do events. So I went on the investigation with the group to this location. And I'm just kind of along for the ride, right? I'm a guest. There's a couple other guests along with the group. We broke up into a couple of different groups. I'm with the guy I'm with. He's the tech director of the group. So he's kind of the techie guy. You know, a very kind of left brain guy, but he's also had some paranormal experiences in his life. And another guest, a female guest. So, you know, I'm just kind of along for the ride. They're doing an investigation. You know, as we started, the group kind of explained how they go about doing an investigation. And I just liked their approach. You know, they talked about how they're never quick to call something paranormal. Like if they hear a knock or a bang, you know, a noise, they always want to, and they explain how they always want to make sure they want to investigate it, and always trying to find the normal before they go to the paranormal. So they really emphasized that, and they had a process for how they set up equipment and how they do an investigation. You know, they mentioned do not talk in a, never whisper, talk in a normal voice, because they're placing voice recorders in different locations, and they don't want their voice, those voice recorders are very sensitive. They don't want it picking up somebody's whisper and not knowing whether that's actually somebody's voice or could be something paranormal. So, you know, they set out all the ground rules. You know, they even said if you have a bodily function, own it. just say it. You know, because these recorders pick up, they're very sensitive, and they can pick up a lot of things. So, you know, they set up all the equipment. The other thing I noticed that they did is they would go silent at the location for a while just to get used to the noises, the normal noises, whether it's a HVAC system kicking on or an ice machine, whatever, just so they can get accustomed to the noises in the building and know what the normal noises are. So was impressed with how the group operated. But as we're at that location, I had a couple more experiences. So one of the experiences was me and the female guest I mentioned, the group I was with was a female guest and one of the group members. So the guy that was, you know, with our group, he got up to go back to the back bar area. And me and the female guest were just sitting there in the dining room. And hey, Town, I don't know what it is about green lights. We're sitting there, and all of a sudden, we watch this strange kind of green light flash across the wall. And, you know, we're in a canyon. There's a canyon road not far off. You know, cars are going up the canyon. We didn't see or hear any car go by. The other gentleman that was with us, the group member, he was off in the bar. And so we saw this strange light. Now, that was kind of interesting, and we kind of thought, well, that was unusual. And, you know, we asked Dave, the guy we were with, whether or not he happened to be walking by that area. He said, no, I was in the bar the whole time, which is off in the distance. He had one of those shoulder-mounted cams, so he thought maybe it could have been a light off his camera, but he was nowhere close by when that happened. At this location, there's also been stories of Native American sightings outside of the building, like on the kind of the grounds outside in the wooded areas. So a little bit later in the night, you know, we're just kind of walking around and such. And, you know, we're still in the dining room, but where you can see kind of outside in the wooded area from the dining room where we're standing. And I look out there and I see this looked like, you know, again, it was another type of light. And it was just kind of moving around in the wooded area. So I thought, well, maybe somebody's walking their dog out there, you know, and they've got a flashlight. It's dark outside. And, you know, I told the female guest and the group member that was with us, I said, hey, do you see that light? And it's like, yeah, it looks like a flashlight. I thought, well, let's go outside and investigate. So we walked outside, kind of walked on the periphery of that wooded area and looked around, and there was nobody inside. There again, no cars coming by, anything like that. So I thought that was unusual. So again, I'm just going along on the event. Nothing else really happened, although we were in the bar area and I was sitting at the bar. I set a voice recorder on the bar and was asking questions, trying to, you know, elicit some sort of response on the voice recorder. So, you know, we finish up the event that night, wrap up, pack up all the equipment, go home. 3 or 4 days later, I'm listening to my voice recorder, and it's that part where I'm sitting at the bar, and I had the voice recorder sitting up on the bar, and I'm asking questions. I also had a flashlight. And I hear a male voice, a distinct male voice, come through on the recorder. So the guy that's our, that's the tech director of the group, he's from the UK. He's got a British accent. It's clear and distinct. It was clearly a male voice. It wasn't his, and it wasn't anybody else in the group.
Yeah, but what did it say exactly?
So the voice, as I heard it and came through, sounded like to me it said flash the flashlight. So the interesting thing, so I captured the audio clip, probably about 10, 15 seconds of it, you know, and captured that voice on it. And I forwarded to some of the other group members and said, hey, I captured this. Listen to it. Tell me what you think. So Dave, the guy, mentioned he listened to it. The female guest who was with us also listened to it. Those are not our voices. That sounds pretty distinct. They all heard the word flashlight there. I heard flashlight too, but to me it sounded like flash the flashlight. Now, when it comes to EVP work, sometimes one of the challenges with doing EVP work is sometimes some people will hear one thing and other people will hear a little bit different variation. What everybody agreed they heard is there was the word flashlight somewhere in there. So everybody at least heard that word. The interesting thing is I had a flashlight and it was up on the bar as well. So to me, that very well could have been an intelligent response because, again, I had a flashlight. So it seemed to be a response to something I was doing. And to me, again, it sounded like flash the flashlight. But again, that's one of the challenges doing EVP work. But we've had many EVPs where we would call them class EVPs at locations we've captured, where there's clear vocal tone and it's clear and everybody agrees on what is being said. So that one, again, we all agreed we heard the word flashlight in the sentence. So that was interesting. And again, so I'm just more and more curious. I'm already comfortable. You know, I've met the group members. I've done the investigation with them. They invited me on to another investigation. And so I just started working with the group. I quickly became a member in training, started going on the other investigations with them. And as they say, the rest is history. And so, you know, I've been doing this now almost 10 years working with the group. So that's how it started for me. And, you know, again, I had those experiences early on. If it would have been boring and nothing would have happened, I may have just said after a couple of times, well, there's probably nothing to this. And, you know, I want to went about my business.
I wanted to ask you real quick. Okay, I know that you've been doing investigations with this particular group, but have you guys went into an active home before?
Very little. So I've only went into residentials, I think, two times the whole time I've been doing paranormal investigating. So a lot of the places we go to are businesses. Either they're businesses. Some of them are abandoned. Like one location that's probably the most active location that we've been to a number of times is an old abandoned hotel. So I have done a couple of residences, but that's it. So it's really not a big part of what we do.
Nothing happened during those two times or what?
Well, yeah, something happened at one of them.
What happened?
I can share that story with you. So I've done some investigations outside of the group. You know, I have friends that know that I do this. And, you know, one of my friends talked to me about a coworker that had been having experiences in his home. And he knew me and my sister-in-law were both in the paranormal group. And he asked if we would come to this guy's home, meet with him, talk him about the experiences he was having at his house, and see if we kind of do a little bit of investigating. So we went, you know, we called the guy, we got his number, we called him up, we went to his house, we met with him, you know, we kind of did an interview with him talking about some of his experiences. Now, one of the things, as I've worked in the paranormal group, we try not to get too much information, and there's kind of a reason why. from the clients, because once you get too much information, sometimes you're kind of, it kind of, you know, you get preconceived notions, if you will, about what's going on. Now, somebody tells you this, this, and this is going on. Now you're looking for A, B, and C, right? So now you're specifically looking for those things instead of just objectively going into a location and doing an investigation and seeing what you find out on your own.
Yes, right. That influences what you guys actually find. So, yeah, you're right. You should totally go into a space not knowing anything except that there is an issue and they're experiencing some things. And then upon whatever you guys find, maybe coming back together with them to see if some of those details match up, I think is the best way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a general rule, yes, we do that. Now, we wanted to give the guy a chance to talk a little bit and just give a little bit of a story about some of the experiences. I mean, he talked about a few of his experiences. We said, we don't want to know everything. But in general, what do you think's going on here? You know, and he was renting the house from a friend. The friend he was renting the house from's father had passed away in that house, probably about, I don't know, 3 or 4 years before he moved in and was renting the place. So he was concerned that perhaps the friend's father was still there and haunting the place and had not moved on. So, we just decided to just go around and, do some investigating. We brought voice recorders, cameras. You know, two of the big things that we do when we do investigating are we bring along voice recorders and we bring along night vision cameras. Those are two of our go-to things. Another thing that we use is EMF meters, electromagnetic frequency meters, like your male meters and that sort of stuff. Sometimes we use them to get an idea if there's high EMF in a location, because if there's high EMF and there's something giving off high EMF, maybe it's a big electrical junction box, that can be a natural explanation to why people are getting uneasy feelings, or even it's even been known to cause hallucinations. So, we'll use those sometimes to, see if there is high EMF in a location in certain parts of a house, a building, whatever. So those are really our, big things that we use when we go on an investigation. 90%+ of the evidence we capture is in the form of audio. So voice recorders are a big deal. Now, the male meter, which is a device, it's an EMF device that I use when I go on investigations. It's got an antenna on it that generates its own electromagnetic field. So if something disrupts that electromagnetic field on that antenna, it will go off. So we were downstairs in the basement, and I mentioned that we use the EMF devices, the male meter. We had voice recorders and stuff, and we were actually trying to get some interaction with the REM device that's on that male meter. So we were using it. We really were not getting any responses. The guy that owned the house talked about the garage, and he had a few strange experiences in the garage. So we went out and explored the garage. My sister-in-law wanted to stay in the garage alone, and I decided to go back in the house, and I was talking with the owner or the guy that was renting the house. And, he said, he started talking a little bit more about the guy and what, he thought was going on. And I said, I'm going to make my way back down to the basement. I'm going to take the male meter with me. And as I went back down to the basement, the guy that's renting the place said, he named the guy's name. Right. And he said, if you're here, James, please go down and interact with Curry. I heard him say it as I'm going down the stairs. So I go down the stairs and I'm down in the basement and just begin exploring and asking questions. And I got the male meter device in my hand and I start asking questions. I start asking, James, are you here with me? The device went off. I also knew that his wife, the guy that had passed away in the home, his wife was in a rest home and she was not doing well. And so, I started asking questions about the wife. Was he hanging around because the wife was still here? And I started getting responses on the device. So one of the things I did kick down is I started changing the line of questioning. And I started asking, do you know who, you know, my sister-in-law was? Yeah, I wouldn't get a response. I started going back to the original line of questioning and asking who we thought was this guy, James, who, you know, died in the house. Again, asking questions about his wife, asking about the guy who was running the place and whether he wanted him there, you know, and I was getting responses to that. This went on, this interaction, for about 5 or 10 minutes. I captured it on audio as well. Now, I know some people will say, EMF devices are really not supposed to be for that. But the interesting thing is, I normally don't get that kind of interaction on a device, on the mail meter. At that point in time, it seemed like I was getting responses to specific questions about the house, about him, about his wife. So that went on for about 10 minutes. And then we wrapped up for the night. But the thing that really blew me away about that was, one, the guy's renting the place asked the guy he thinks was there, James, to do some interaction with me. Shortly after that, when I was down in the basement, I started getting the interaction on the device. And again, all the questioning that I was asking along the lines of him, the guy's renting the place, about his wife, I was getting interaction on the device. And it was pretty much instantaneous after I would ask one of those related questions. So that was interesting. So that's kind of one of my really, only big experiences I had with residential places. I mentioned that there is another location that the group has went to. It's an old abandoned hotel. Can't mention the specific name of the location just because of the client. Client doesn't want us to mention the name, and so we kind of keep it confidential. But the group's been there many, many times, and some group members have been there probably 30 or 40 times. So this particular location, we've had all kinds of paranormal activity happen there over the course of, several investigations.
And this is the abandoned hotel that you were talking about.
Right, that is correct. It's this old abandoned hotel. And it was a kind of a, there was a lot of, stuff that went on at this old hotel. I mean, it was no 4-star hotel, right?
Tell us where is it located? And do you know why it's abandoned?
It just closed down. I don't know all the specifics about it, why it closed down. It closed down in the 80s. I want to say in the late 80s. And it's somewhere in Wyoming. I don't want to get into specific locations, but it's a place we've taken many road trips to and have investigated many times. So at this particular location, we have had pretty much everything under the sun in terms of what you would expect to experience at a haunted location or a place that has ghostly activity. We've had all sorts of EVPs that we've cataloged at this location. We've had disembodied voices. We've had people touched. We've had our names called on the voice recorder. We've even, a few members have witnessed full body apparitions at this location. I personally never witnessed a full body apparition, and this whole 10 years, close to 10 years I've been doing investigating, have not seen that. Now, we've saw shadows there. We've just had so many experiences, battery drains, brand new batteries and voice recorders and camera equipment get drained. Another interesting thing about this location, there's so many interesting things. We've heard phantom footsteps. We're down at what we call base camp in the first floor of the building, and we hear doors slam upstairs. And, we go up there and there's nobody up there. We hear somebody walking around when we're all down in the basement. We walk upstairs. We're walking around just to make sure there's no fleshies in the building. Nothing. There's nobody up there. Go back down. Sometimes, you'll hear footsteps start up again. Just all kinds of unusual stuff over the course of many years that the group and I have been to the location. There is one part of this location, this building on the third floor, up in the back corner of the third floor, where a lot of females get an uneasy feeling. And just to kind of put it in perspective, so we've had female group members, a few have had their hair tugged, get a bad feeling there, but we've also brought female guests in and told them nothing about the location. And we've walked them around the building and taken them up to that back room on that third floor area, and they get an uneasy feeling. I'm not saying all females have, but we've had that happen probably in two or three different occasions where we've had guests there, and you walk, and it's typically only females. You know, we've had guys that come there as guests, they go up there, they don't feel anything. Females get a bad feeling in that one spot in the building. So, we've had other things like one of our group members, female group members, had her hair tugged up there. We've had interaction on devices up there right in that area. And we think it may be a male spirit that just simply does not like females very much. Or maybe he feels like, you know, he's superior to women or something. We've asked those kind of questions and we've got responses on devices to those questions in that location. Now, they've been, you know, at times we go up there and we try and get an interaction, nothing happens. That's the other thing about the paranormal is you'll go into a location and, you know, one time you'll have three or four things happen that are interesting on a given night. And then you go back to the location a week or two later and investigate again and not a thing happens. And so that's kind of what's unusual about doing this is, you know, you want to go back to a location and, you know, you're like, okay, well, you know, we experienced A, B, and C last time. So, you know, we're kind of expecting something to happen the next time you go there. And we went back on other occasions to, you know, investigate the location and absolutely nothing will happen. But this location is kind of the, if you want to say the holy grail of the location for the group, because so many members have experienced different things there. I've witnessed self-illuminating balls of light go right in front of me at this location. Again, I mentioned I haven't seen a full body apparition. I've seen shadows, those sorts of things. But on one occasion, and I think this happened before I ever joined the group, three of the group members were up on the second floor and they had a ball sitting up on a, I think they had it sitting up on one of the vents. And, it was stable. It was not moving or anything. And they were trying to get some interaction. And one of the group members saw two of the group members saw this ball get picked up and tossed. It was just one of those things that very, very, very rare occasions where something like that happens, but they witnessed it. So it's a location where we pretty much experience just about everything you would expect to experience in the paranormal.
And that sounds amazing. I want to ask you, do you guys, for this like abandoned hotel, and I know you don't want to tell us the location of it, but are you free to just go in there at will, or are you guys scheduling the areas that you choose to go in and investigate, or how are you doing that exactly?
Yeah, so we actually have to get permission from the there's a lady, she works for the city there, and so she's kind of the caretaker and has keys to different buildings in the town, and so we have to schedule it with her ahead of time. You know, she'll give us keys to the building because, you know, the city, the town, they actually still use that building to like store stuff at times. In the basement, they'll store stuff. So it's really owned by the city right now, the town. From what I'm hearing, they're getting ready to sell the building. So we may no longer have access to that location, unfortunately. But the group started, I want to say the group formed in like 2011 or 2012. And they've been investigating that location since 2012. Now, I joined the group in late 2013, first visited the location in 2014, and I've probably been there 12 to 14 times.
So tell me, I know we're running out of time here, but do you guys have anything else scheduled? I mean, do you take like groups of people, like say a group wants to go and join you on some of these locations? Do you guys do that?
Yeah, not very often. And if we do, it's typically a family member, someone, a close friend that says, hey, I'd like to come check out what you guys do. You know, I brought my wife along before on a couple of our investigations just as a guest. It's typically somebody we know pretty well. You know, we did do one event here in Ogden at Union Station on historic 25th Street, which is another interesting location where we brought some guests along on an investigation we did there. So from time to time we don't really do public events, you know, where you announce it on Facebook and you charge people to come and pay to go to the event. We don't really do that. There are some groups in the area that do that. We don't really do public events.
All right. Why don't you tell my listeners about your book and if you're working on anything else and how they can keep up with you, if you don't mind.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, the book's really about my journey into the paranormal, how I kind of went to from a skeptic to eventually a believer in this, right? So I've had enough experiences over these years to that, I mean, there've been so many experiences, cumulative experiences, really. And that's what it's about. It's really about all those experiences I've had. I've been doing the Passion for the Paranormal podcast show for over 5 years now. One of the things, as I kind of continued along in the show, I started exploring different topic areas as well. Whether it be UFO topics, near-death experiences, reincarnation, psychics and mediums, just about anything unexplainable under the sun, even cryptids and Bigfoot and all those sorts of things. So I really have a, you know, I think my journey into the paranormal, it's not just about, you know, working with the paranormal group and the experiences I've had doing that. It's also about where I've come to on the back end of this. And that is, you know, I think I mentioned 20 years ago, if you would ask me about psychics and mediums, I might have rolled my eyes and shook my head and said, you know, I don't really, you know, believe in that. I'm not really sure that that's legit. Now I'm open to all these sorts of things. So I think, you know, I talk about that journey in my book and how I went from that curious skeptic to, you know, going into the paranormal. I think I mentioned, you know, I've been interested in the UFO subject. I did have a UFO sighting when I was 12 years old. So maybe, just maybe, a friend and I had a UFO sighting. Maybe, just maybe, that UFO sighting I had as a young kid, and I never had one since, maybe that opened me up to other possibilities. And I think maybe that's why I'm just thinking that maybe that one experience perhaps down the road opened me up a little bit more to other possibilities. And so, you know, that's what the book's about and how I kind of came out the back end of this. You know, I'm open to the idea of near-death experiences. There's been a lot of research done on it. I'm open to the idea of reincarnation, too. I've had guests on the show that their psychics or mediums are involved in spiritual type healing work that, you know, have talked about reincarnation. And, you know, I've read up on stories about, like, James Lineger, the kid who believed he was a World War II pilot in a previous life. And a lot of the things that he talked about at a very young age, at the age of 4, you know, his parents were able to validate and check out. So I think it's really the message about the book is not only about just my experiences in doing paranormal investigation and, you know, the experiences I've had there, but where I've come to on the back end of this is being open to all these other things and all these other topics that I've explored on the podcast. So that's kind of what it's about. You can find links to my book or my podcast episodes on my website. And that is, it's a long one. It's passion4theparanormal.com. And you can also find me on Facebook at facebook.com/passion4theparanormal. So that's really the best way to find out about me. As far as other things I have going on, I'm just, you know, I'm just continuing this journey. I mean, I'm 10 years into this and I'm still doing this. So this is probably going to be a lifelong pursuit for me because, you know, I'm always interested in exploring more, going to new locations. I'm still working with the paranormal group and there's still times where I go out with friends and go explore other locations as well. So it's I guess it's been a bit of a spiritual awakening for me too on the back end of this. And I think that's kind of the message in the book. Not only has it been about all the, you know, how this has opened me up and I've had these experiences. And look, I didn't have paranormal experiences as a kid. They didn't come to me. I went out and explored it, and I had those experiences because I went out to explore it. Now, I haven't had things follow me home. I haven't had anything bad happen to me. And, you know, you hear a lot of stories about that in the paranormal. So I also talk about that in the book, about the fear factor of what you hear on paranormal shows, about the demonic. And, you know, I really, that's another aim I want to do with the book. One of my goals is to kind of talk about how I think that's kind of on the periphery, to tell you the truth. The reality of the paranormal is, I think if that stuff goes on, it really doesn't happen very often. And it hasn't been my experience. So I'm not trying to, you know, knock anybody else's experiences. There are people that claim to have those kinds of experiences. It just hasn't been my experience. And I really also want to drive home the message that I don't really think we have a whole lot to fear here. I think exploring the paranormal is a worthy pursuit. And, you know, it's really opened me up and really made me believe that, hey, we do move on. Consciousness moves on after death. And I think that's the big message and what I'm really trying to drive home with the book.
Very good. His book is called Walking in the Shadows of Strangers, My Journey into the Paranormal. Curry Stegan, my special guest. Curry, many blessings to you, and I really appreciate your time.
K-Town, it's been a pleasure to be on with you, and I really appreciate it. Thank you so much for having me on the show.
To find out more about our guest and all others, please visit our website at mysteriousradio.com. And I want to give special thanks to our co-creator and executive producer, Kim Kyle, who brought this show to you today. And working hard behind the scenes, our team of four, I want to thank them as well. Follow us on social media and share the show with others that may like the subjects that we cover. I am your host, K-Town, and you're listening to Mysterious Radio.